Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
So we sit in the seats inside the O2 Arena with the place being dismantled. There is blue and white ticker tape all over the blue court on which the tennis has been played at the ATP Finals over the last week, and on which, just about an hour ago, Alexander Zverev hit a two-handed backhand down the line, a clean winner that left Novak Djokovic despairing, hurdling the net to congratulate his victorious opponent, who had beaten him in straight sets. Catherine Whittaker is back. Hello.
I am back. Only come in for the big matches.
Yeah. You're a big match player. Grad Mats here. Hello.
Hello.
Wow. What have we just witnessed? How big a shock does that feel right now? Because I think when we came in, we were all predicting a Djokovic win, weren't we? And yet at the end, he looked a little bit helpless.
It wasn't the neat little end-of-season narrative that we'd all prepared, was it? I mean, the story of this season is Novak Djokovic's climb back to the top of the rankings, and Zverev reminded us in his speech that he had surgery this year. You know, he's ended the year number one, he's won two slams, he's done it all in the same year that he's had surgery, and that all remains the case. He's still the best player of 2018 by some way, and yet we're now going to talk about Sasha Zverev. It didn't this week or today, or the rest of the week, it certainly went to plan for him, but it just wasn't what any of us were expecting or planning on. It wasn't even as competitive as any of us were expecting or planning on.
Was that because Zverev was too good today, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. I really did not see this coming, and judging by our Twitter feed, nor did a lot of other people, I put out there that only 3% in our pole vault had Zverev to win in two.
Pole vault, you say?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, Catherine.
That emphasises how relevant it is. But he probably would have had it at close to 3%. I mean, on form and...
Yeah. But really, for me, it was Djokovic's form that I thought was the key coming into this match, because he was just looking brilliant all tournament. But today, like their group stakes match, it all changed at 4-4 in the first set, except it changed the other way. Then Zverev in the group had a break point, didn't take it, and Novak ran away with it. Today, Djokovic has just been impressed, saying that his game fell apart. Those are his words.
Wow.
He was hitting the panic button a lot in points in that second set, wasn't he? You know, coming into the net at completely random times, hitting panicky shots.
Yeah.
It was odd seeing that happen to a guy that has been playing breathtaking tennis all week.
And for me, it was his forehand. It was, even in the first set, it was okay, but he was dropping it quite short. And then when he was serving to stay in the first set, it just fell apart. Two forehand errors, and it carried on in the second set. And that for me was the real shock about this match. But we should give credit to Zverev, who picked up where he left off against Federer and actually, I think, played even better.
I do think he forced that in many ways. Not 100%. I mean, I'm still surprised that Djokovic didn't come back and at least win a set. I am surprised by that. But when you look at the service statistics of Zverev, 21 out of 24 first serves landed in the first set. That's 87%. And he was serving basically all the time 130 miles an hour and above. He, most of them were between 135 and 141, and he's getting 87% of them in.
Yeah, and that's the only real weapon that he has that Djokovic doesn't have. I mean, Djokovic has absolutely maximised his serve and made it into a weapon, but not relative to the rest of his game. Whereas for Zverev at 6'6", I think the serve, I think we'd probably all agree the serve has been a revelation, Zverev wise.
I didn't expect, I didn't know he had a serve like this. I genuinely thought that this was a dodgy speed gun, because when
it went at
the
gun.
Right at the start of the week, Brad Gilbert tweeted 140, 141 back to back serves. Is this a fast gun? And I said, without question, it is, because he doesn't do this anywhere else, or at least I can't remember him. Basically, he just looks like he rolls his arm over and gets these readouts on the gun, and nobody else was getting that in a regular
and no
fashion.
One was picking it either, not even Djokovic, the best anticipator, as Leon Smith said on the return, not picking it at all. And whether that's sort of experience, people are still relatively inexperienced with returning the Zverev serve. I don't think it's entirely that. I do think it's difficult to read, but otherwise their games are so alike, aren't they? And although sometimes the matchup tennis wise between two players with very similar styles can be disappointing or dreary, or I don't think it was today. I think it was by and large pretty good. But psychologically, it was thrilling, because you got two guys just going, I'm going to play your game and I'm going to play it better than you. You know, Zverev stepping out there to Djokovic and going, I'm going to play your game in your face.
He Djokovic'd
him. Win.
Well, no one can go toe-to-toe on the backhand with Djokovic and beat him the way Zverev did. The number of cross-court rallies they had on the backhand, and Zverev was the one coming out on top. That was unbelievable.
And the plan of attack for both of them was to try and attack the forehand, wasn't it? They were both trying to slice into one another's forehand.
And Zverev's been staunchly defending his forehand all week against, in the press, with people saying maybe it's his weakest shot, and he's been saying, I think it's a really good shot.
Have they no respect for the tennis podcast? The
industrial, just interrupting
have some respect.
Me.
There's an industrial drill holder down there who desperately wants to be on the tennis podcast, and that was his introduction. Look, the one thing I would say about that, though, Leon Smith in our commentary today was talking about how he felt that Djokovic wasn't going to the forehand enough, that he was allowing himself to settle into these backhand-to-backhand rallies, And feeding it to Zverev in a way that a really confident on it Djokovic surely would have taken a down the line backhand more often, and he didn't today.
How can he? Do you think there's? It sounds ridiculous given how brilliant Djokovic has been. He's pretty much, goodness me, given every match of recent times apart from today. But is there cause for alarm for Djokovic given that? Would he currently be feeling, maybe this is, you know, anxious old me, my way of looking at it, rather than a 14-time Grand Slam champion's way of looking at it. But, you know, to be playing brilliant tennis and to feel unbeatable, he must have felt unbeatable. We're talking a lot about all the signs of how fantastically relaxed he is. The fact that he's not letting all this talk about how Federer gets special treatment get to him, because, you know, he's just feeling so great right now. To be feeling that brilliant and to be beaten as soundly as he was today must just feel a bit worrying for him. You know, it wasn't in his control what happened today.
No, I think he had a bad day, but I think it was certainly 50%.
It's two straight,
forced
two consecutive
into
final losses, though.
And then,
I mean, you know, these are... It's still been an exceptional year. He's the best player of the year. What he's done this year is unreal. It is unreal, but... He's a perfectionist, you know. We're talking about a guy that openly talks now about wanting to break all the records, even those of Nadal and Federer. So,
but he's on a two Grand Slam winning streak.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, isn't it?
By and large, things are positive.
I suppose what I'm getting at is, would that performance have happened at the Australian Open in January?
No. I think, we see... Nadal, Federer, Djokovic are above the rest on the regular tour. Once they get to the slams, that gap just gets bigger. Over five sets, the big moments, that's where you back them the most. The thing I would say about Djokovic now, interestingly, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, his last two losses had been Tsitsipas and Khachanov, which felt significant. For Zverev in, they're the three young guys that everyone's talking about, and they're the only guys to have beaten Djokovic in the second half of this year. So that's something he's going to have to contend with next year, but, you know, wouldn't totally surprise me if he came out and was just even more fired up next year to prove them I'm still the man.
I would say that I'm there are way bigger question marks in my mind about whether Zverev can transfer this version of himself onto the Grand Slam platform than whether Djokovic will have any doubts.
Agreed.
About himself.
Agreed.
In
Melbourne.
I mean, and I know you're not saying that, but this does nothing to my conviction that Djokovic will win the Australian
no,
Open.
No, and I think that's probably reflected in how he's performing towards the end of the match, as it turned out to be, towards the end of the second set. Zverev was playing like a guy that needed this title, and Djokovic was playing like a guy that wanted this title. Mm.
And also, just again on something Djokovic has just said in press, he has had a slightly funny year in that he's had so much workload in the back half of the year. He's got so many points and so many wins in the second half. He said he felt today just a little bit flat, a little bit like it may be caught up with him, which doesn't really explain the discrepancy in performance from today from last night when he was sort of perfect. But that's possibly a factor. You know, you go into Australia, he's fresh and he's going to be the favourite. But Zverev maybe is now the second favourite. I don't know.
Ooh.
What do you think about that?
Well, I just feel like until he produces it at the Australian Open. Look, I had him in the final at the US Open this year, based on Lendl, based on all those things. I think we've seen, I mean, they joked about it, Bruno Suarez, didn't he, about the Lendl effect when he was with Andy Murray. Mm. You know, you could have the Lendl effect in all walks of life. But, I mean, you know, I believe in it. When it comes to a guy like Zverev, I feel that there is a big difference maker there, in terms of his approach as much as anything else. He's just, it seems to me, he's doing for Zverev not just what he did for Lendl, but what Goran Ivanisevic did for Marin Cilic. Just serve like a bloke of 6'6", will you?
Simplify.
Just strip it down and dominate.
I don't disagree with you, David. I don't at all. But somebody has to mention the fact that a year ago to the day, we were sat in possibly these very same seats, looking over the very same court.
With the same clanging sounds
with the same audio backdrop, talking about Grigor Dimitrov in the very same terms. Now, I know
Whether they're same terms? Did we
similar,
have this degree
you know, about it being the stepping stone but towards what we felt he's always been destined for. Now, the similarities are not that there are that they do end, you know. That Dimitrov's got even a year ago, let alone now, got a heck of a lot more scar tissue and baggage that he carries onto court, and that is critical, absolutely critical. He's got less belief than Zverev, even though he's a guy that has reached Grand Slam semi-finals already. So look, it's not a slam dunk of a comparison, but it's worth mentioning, isn't it? Because
do you know, it was the first question I asked Leon Smith in commentary after the celebration and before the presentation is there a danger that the same thing could happen to Alexander Zverev next year has happened to Grigor Dimitrov following his triumph here? One word answer: no.
I
said why. He said he's just, you're dealing with a different type of player at a different stage in his career, and I think his view is just Zverev has got more of the components, including the mental ones. He walks around, and it irritates at times that he walks around as if he belongs with those top three or four in the world. I know he's ranked that, but he walks around like he's already got slams under the belt, and yet he hasn't actually done an awful lot at that level yet. But you know what? If he's prepared to take the heat that comes with that, and people maybe like me who pointed out, good luck to him. You know, because that takes guts to do
it. Hang on, though. is he prepared to take all the heat that comes with that? Because he does get chippy about people pressing him on things. You know, when he gets asked the same questions in press,
he
gets
to
really
be chippy
about it.
That he's not on some sort of charm offensive where he's just trying to make us all love him, is he? He's quite happy to just be a little bit unpopular, I suppose, in some quarters.
Yeah, I think it's that Jez Green is about to walk in front. Remember a couple of years ago when we were sat in these seats when Murray had just beaten Djokovic to end the year as number one, and we saw Boris Becker taking his farewell selfie.
Yes, that's right, of course. His last day
as coach of Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
I don't think this is Jez Green's last day as fitness trainer to Jez Green. That is a broad smile that man is wearing.
I mean, could he look any happier?
My goodness,
He walks towards us. He's got a bag over one shoulder. He's holding another one. He's shouting things over towards Robbie Koenig, who's on the court at the moment, is Jez Green. And, he looks incredibly happy. And I think a word for him is warranted. Because he's been, I didn't realise until the actual presentation when Alexander Zverev paid tribute to his fitness trainer that they'd been together for 5 years. I didn't realise it had been that long. What I do remember is, I looked it up, 3 years ago, first round of the Australian Open, Zverev drew Andy Murray, and he lost to Murray 6-1, 6-2, 6-3. Absolute dismantling. It was man against boy. And a day or so before that, and you can go back and listen to the podcast, we actually had Jez on as our guest, and I think we asked him, how long is it going to take you, do you feel, to get him to a point where he can be competing physically with a guy like Andy Murray, who he was about to play? And he said, oh, it's going to take me 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, because there's so much preparatory work that you have to do with these guys, and we can't be in a rush. Although he is in a rush because he wants to be the best. You know, he was 18, and it's going to take a while. And you look at the physique on the guy, he doesn't even look that much different. He's still lanky and wiry and lean, isn't he? And he's never, I don't know whether he'll ever properly sort of fill out in the way that some of the others have, but
just a bit of live commentary for you here, David. I think what's happened is that Robbie Koenig has run after Jez Green and asked him for a bottle of champagne that he was carrying in his bag. And Robbie Koenig is now wandering around the O2 court with a golden bottle of champagne. I mean, he's going to have it. No, what's he going to? He's going to get his own duffel bag.
Yeah.
Party's about to start.
Good stuff, Rob. Get yourself over here and crack that thing open.
We should have invited Jez Green over to distribute his champagne. I can't remember what we were saying.
Well, we were talking about the job that Jez Green has done. And the other thing, just to say, sometimes when a guy like Jez Green, who we all sort of know, gets a big job like that, and a player can often become paranoid and they don't want them talking to you and all this sort of thing. Jez is still a nice bloke, isn't he? He's always somebody who'll talk to you, he'll give you an interview, he's not worried about talking to you in front of his player. You don't always get that. And I'm just really pleased for him on a personal level, because he's a great guy.
Yeah, it's a very good point. 5 years have been together. As he said that, I was reminded of the fact that I saw Zverev at Delray Beach. It would have been 5 years ago, because he was 16 and he's 21 now.
Really?
And he was playing he'd been given a wild card into Quali's first round, and Jez was there because Jez lives in Delray Beach, and I think they'd just started working together. And he had already signed up to work with the agent Patricio that he's still with now.
Patricio,
who interestingly Tsitsipas is also with.
Yes.
We'll come on to that in a minute. And yet the court was absolutely, I think the entire crowd, and there were quite a lot of them, were probably agents or wannabe agents. The court was crawling with them. And I remember, exactly as you say, having a very open chat with Jez back then.
It's a big call, isn't it, for a guy like him to invest in a player like this.
Absolutely.
Because you've got to build the guy for all these years. And A, you don't know for sure whether they are going to be able to fulfill what you hope is their potential, and B, you don't even know if they're going to take you along for the ride after a couple of years.
Yeah, and also you can kind of only lose, right? Everyone's saying this guy's a future world number one, so all you can do is help them to achieve exactly what everyone's going to say. You can't overachieve if everyone's expecting them to be.
It's broad shoulders for him as well, isn't it, Zverev, because he has had that for years. And I do think maybe some of Dimitrov's problems have come over the years with people like us in the media, in the punditry world, and all the rest of it, all saying, well, particularly the baby fed nickname, all of that. It weighs heavily on a lot of these players.
Yeah, and I think Dimitrov's always carried his own expectation and everyone else's. Whereas Zverev, we've certainly had high expectations, but we've not had a sort of nice catchphrase for it like baby fed. It's not been, it doesn't seem to me like it's been as strong.
He doesn't seem to give a stuff what anybody thinks.
He's not into ring kissing, is he? There's no reverence at all.
No.
Let's clarify that we all know what I meant by
he's
that.
He's not into.
He doesn't kiss the ring.
What does that mean?
You explain, Catherine.
It's deference and reverence, isn't it? It's a display of extreme reverence.
Right.
You know, and the top guys, that's a big weapon for them. That walking onto court with the aura of kiss my ring, you know. It's a recognised turn of phrase. It is a recognised kosher turn of phrase,
is
I
it?
Promise you.
Okay, fine.
Moving on. The other.
Right. It's not a sycophantic thing. It's not sucking up. It's.
Have you heard it?
It's
not.
Oh, come on, guys.
Well, we just don't have the vocabulary of Catherine Whittaker.
Matt, say something while I Google the phrase.
The reason this feels different for me to Dimitrov winning last year is Zverev's gone through Federer and Djokovic back to back. Dimitrov went through, Sock and Goffin. Now, no disrespect to them, but they're not Federer and Djokovic. And that's kind of the thing, as much as his performances in Grand Slams have been missing, you know, he needs to beat the top guys.
Back to back, straight sets.
Which, you know, people don't do that. And Zverev's now done it, and that sets him up really well the next time he takes the court against those two. Now, it's not to say he's going to win, but he's got that belief.
To give respect,
Catherine,
or reverence to someone, to express servitude to someone, traditional use is in reference to a pope or to a king.
And there's a picture to illustrate this point of somebody kissing the ring on Pope. Which one is it?
Pope Francis.
Oh, yeah.
Current Pope.
His finger, yeah. Fine, so now we know, or at least I know. Catherine already knew because she's that much more well-spoken and educated than me.
There were no edits there at all, I promise.
No, not at all.
We had one straight set. You've just reminded me that we only had one three-set match this whole tournament.
Yeah,
it was the match that nobody wanted to go to straight three sets.
We only had... Hold on a minute. We only had one three-set match
in
the whole
singles.
Tournament.
In the singles, yeah.
So how many do we have overall then? We had, 13 matches?
13 straight sets and one three-set up.
How will this tournament be reflected upon?
Well, actually, I feel like the end of it, the final weekend of it, has been really exciting because, I mean, those are two, on paper, those are two big shocks, and both in straight sets, the arrival of a new kid on the block. I know he's been around for a while, but this is his real moment, isn't it? Plus, we had the fun and games yesterday with all the booing.
It's good news for the ATP and for the tournament Zverev winning, isn't it? Because I as much as they're in a good spot right now, this tournament's doing well, the ATP Tour's doing well, they are panicked about the post Federer Nadal, even post Djokovic Murray future. They definitely are.
Yeah.
And you know, they're right to. They're right to. This is not once in a generation, this is once in a ever.
Yes.
And this helps, you know, it helps that one of the guys that they have been pushing, possibly pushing too hard, you know, they might be one of the entities that's guilty of weighing too heavy on these people's shoulders and maybe allowing the egos to get out of control. it's good news for them that one of the guys that they've been pushing has done a really substantial thing. Something it will help even more when he wins a Grand Slam, but this is good for them.
Catherine, we haven't had you on since the events of yesterday and all the booing. Late last night, while I was just pondering, I ended up on Twitter and I tweeted, and I suddenly thought to myself, are we getting all this wrong about this booing? We're all getting very on our high horses and we're all saying that it's awful, and obviously well done Annabelle Croft, and actually I do feel that she did a good job yesterday, and we're all criticising all the people who booed and saying there's no place for that in tennis and it's not fair to Alexander Zverev, etc, etc. Then I suddenly thought, as long as you're not going really over the top and abusing the guy or throwing things or being violent or being or anything like that, if you're booing, if you're expressing how you feel at that particular point, isn't that sort of allowable? Isn't that okay? Doesn't that create more of an atmosphere? Don't we then have that feeling that, yeah, this matters, people care?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's easy for me to say not being on the receiving end of it. I'm sure if I was standing there being booed for no good reason, I wouldn't enjoy it at all. But it is pantomime. It is pure pantomime. And I sort of tend to agree that unless it becomes abusive, it's just something that, unfortunately, even though it might sting a bit at the time, you've just got to take with a pinch of salt. It's not to say Annabelle was wrong at all. It was really interesting how she handled the situation. But yeah, I mean, it didn't make me as outraged as it made some people, the fact that he was being booed in that moment. I certainly wouldn't have been booing him, but
it was. I would say it was a lot louder in the stadium than it came across on TV.
I'm sure it was loud, but
the other factor is, I don't think I've ever admired Novak Djokovic more than when he withstood what he withstood in that US Open final in 2015. That made it. That wasn't just winning a Grand Slam title. That was 23,000 people booing him and bullying him and trying to influence the outcome of that match, put him off, and he just puffed out his chest and he said, fine, I'll take you all on and I'll beat him anyway, and he did it, and that brought out something that was incredible entertainment as a spectacle to see that. I mean, I don't want to turn tennis into football all the time, and football goes too far and becomes toxic and unpleasant a lot of the time, but the spice, the feel of slight, I don't know, to feel a bit uncomfortable in a stadium has its own value.
Yeah, and I like the players that are prepared to embrace the dark side a bit. I've never liked Djokovic more than in that moment when he just said, screw you all. And, you know, I'm going to prove you wrong and I don't mind being your dark knight, you know. People don't have to all love you all of the time. And I think Zverev is going to be that guy. I cannot wait for the Zverev-Tsitsipas rivalry to ignite, because as Simon says, he's pretty convinced that they do genuinely dislike one
Leon
another.
Smith thinks that Zverev is significantly better than Khachanov, Tsitsipas and all the others.
And what about Zverev? He's seen Tsitsipas win next gen and getting a bit of hype, and he's just come along and won the actual Tour finals.
He's
one up him
in
there,
the
hasn't
Maldives,
he?
You know, getting his racket.
Tsitsipas is with
ready.
Marcus Baghdatis in he somewhere.
Is. What a great photo that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to look into
hanging
that.
Out
yeah, it's chilling.
Just right. Okay.
They're going on a little trip together. I tell you what, I don't think Australia has really experienced Tsitsipas yet, has it? Because his run came on after that. Just think back to
the huge Greek community.
To what it was like with Baghdatis doing what he did, and imagine how Tsitsipas is going to get them going.
He's going to get a decent seeding as well, because he's 15 in the world at the moment, so should be seeded top 16. Yeah, I mean that is going to be interesting. And obviously, I'm not casting any aspersions on any of the wonderful rivalries that we've been treated to in men's tennis over the last few years. Murray, Djokovic, Djokovic, Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, Nadal, Federer, all of them are truly marvellous. But I am ready for a rivalry where two players openly dislike one another. I am so, so ready for that. Give me McEnroe Connors. Yeah. You know, it's time for that now.
Do you think that will actually happen with those two? Or do you think eventually they will just sort of, I don't know, start getting on?
No, I don't. Well, there's no, I mean, you know, who knows the people that they'll be in 5 years, but there's no signs of that at the moment. They're both very sure of who they are. It's not like they're sort of kids, you know, just establishing themselves in the playground. They're both pretty sure of who they are already. Yeah. Hopefully it can only get worse.
Troublemaker Catherine Whittaker.
Love I grow.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've been missing it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The doubles final today, won by Jack Sock and Mike Bryan. Cracking final. Matt, you saw all of it over Pierre Hugobert and Nicolas Mahut.
I did, yeah. It was really good. Mahut and Herbert wiped the floor with them in the group stages, and Sock and Bryan were much better today. Cracking match tiebreak. I actually really like a match tiebreak. I think it was perfect in that situation. And
he's a next genner, you see.
Well, no, if I was next gen, I'd want first of four, sudden death to use. No, none of that. Just match tiebreak.
Do you qualify for next gen?
No.
You have to be in the year of your 21st birthday.
Yeah, no, I don't. No.
Do I? No.
Blimey. No, it was a really good final. And just Sock and Bryan, what a pairing they've been. Their first tournament was Queens. And they've won every sort of big title since, Wimbledon, US Open, and now this. And, you know, Mike Bryan is obviously one half of the best doubles player, the best doubles team ever.
Freudian.
Yes. But he hadn't won two slams in a season for about 5 years, I think. And Sock's come along, and, I mean, that man can play doubles. I did see someone put it rather cruelly, but it was quite entertaining. Sock proving that Socks are only useful in pairs. Based after his singles performances. But
he was here a year ago.
Good.
Yeah, very good.
Did someone tweet that?
Yeah.
That person has been waiting for Jack Sock's demise all year in order for that.
Yes.
The moment that they heard of the name Jack Sock, they thought, right, I've got a,
that was in their draft,
I've got a
it?
Pun here that is going to get used one day. So Nicolas Mahut and Pierre Hugobert will go off to Lille.
Yes.
The Davis Cup final.
Mahut will be hoping not to be dropped by...
He got dropped in favour of...
Gasquet, wasn't it, last year? Although Gasquet's out injured.
Yeah.
So probably a relief for everyone.
So I'm pretty sure they will be playing doubles.
So Hugobert and Mahut are going to the Davis Cup final.
Just their... I think Hugues is part of his first name.
All right.
It's Pierre Hugues. Okay.
And also there's some
What more can I get wrong today?
There's some nice spice with... Because they had a little incident with the Croatian player.
Yes.
Pavic.
In this tournament, Pavic accused Mahut of acting when he slipped... Well, he fell over the Lacoste sign at the back
harsh,
of the court.
Because it was
quite obvious,
fall.
Us Croatians say it how it is.
So I'm looking forward to that doubles in the
And then
final.
We've got Cioric and Cilic going there. In the singles for... Who are we expecting for France? I think Puy. Did I say that right?
Puy. It's more of a... Puy. More of... Imagine there's a Y in the L's.
Oh.
That's cleared things up.
This is all a bit hard, isn't it?
You can teach us Birmingham later.
Right.
Jeremy Shardy's on the team. Songa, Puy, and Eben Mo.
And Grad Matt, representing the Tennis Podcast, will be there on our behalf. And we will be bringing you daily tennis podcasts from Thursday through to Sunday from Lille. Grad Matt will be there. Catherine Whittaker and myself will be presenting every single day. So do make sure you subscribe and download and tell your friends and leave us reviews and hopefully enjoy those daily dispatches. We will then, Catherine, be starting our Kickstarter aimed at 2019.
Yeah, apparently we just can't get enough podcasting.
I know. It's all you making me do it. So... Keep your eyes peeled for that as well, if you wouldn't mind, because Grad Matt is no longer a student, so now he needs looking after in order to work for us and do the sterling job he's been doing. Hasn't he been good?
He has been good. Yeah,
amazing.
A revelation, some might say.
Many have said it this week, including us.
Many members of the Whittaker family have said it. Yeah.
They seem more excited about him than us. Don't
they are a bit. Yeah.
Far many Whittakers than Roberts have been saying. Yeah, that's for sure.
Did though. I don't want to end on a potential low.
Oh, here we go.
Did we get an answer to the pork scratching question? I mean, today might not have been the day to ask it, but...
No, he was not asked
we'll
that.
We'll never know.
No. Okay. Well, unless he was asked in Serbian press, unless that had reached Serbian press.
Have to wait till Australia.
We'll mark him down from an A+ to an A.
What do you think he has for Christmas dinner?
Ooh.
Djokovic.
At Tennis Podcast, what does
liquid
Novak Djokovic
or
have for
liquid
Christmas
turkey.
Dinner? He's a vegan, isn't he?
Can you imagine a liquidised Christmas dinner? Is there anything more? Do you think he just has sprouts?
I have a liquid
really
Christmas
like
dinner.
I really like sprouts.
mostly beer. So, have you enjoyed it?
It's been excellent, yes. Thank you very much. The tennis got going, didn't it, eventually? We sort of got through... 4, 5, 6 podcasts without huge amounts of tennis to talk about.
Yeah.
And this weekend it's been very exciting.
Excellent, excellent. So, we've been the Tennis Podcast. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Go and read Simon Briggs's articles. No doubt he'll have written something amazing. We are executive produced by Melanie Bowes, SSS, tennisballs.com, sponsored by La Manga Club, and our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. And as they dismantle the O2 Arena and... pile boxes high of all the seats. They are literally taking the seats off one by one around us. Ours are about to go as well. So on that note, we will sign off and speak to you again on Thursday from the Davis Cup final by BNP Paribas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.